Hey, the start of something special right here, man. Let's go.
Number one fantasy player right here.
Got past the line. Shut up. Know the rules.
I just want to say this to you. Right now, best in the game. I know.
Hello and welcome in to the Pod After Touchdown Fantasy Football Podcast. I am your host, Sam Hoppin, joined as always by my co-host, Andrew Mackins, and our producer, Garner. And on today's show, we have a special guest. It is Sam Factor, who is also known by his Twitter handle, FF_Factors. He is here to talk with us about the AFC East. He is formerly a writer at NumberFire, which is where I got to know him, and has now moved on to bigger and better things, starting his own venture with Factor Analytics. Sam, welcome to the show.
Thank you. And we talked a little bit about naming before the show. I'm one of the worst people at coming up with names. So I've actually rebranded already from Factor Analytics to Walter Picks. But thanks for having me on the show. I'm really excited to talk about the AFC East.
Perfect. Yeah, speaking of names, Andrew and Garner, you're definitely going to have to call out which Sam you're talking to now. This is obviously a first for having multiple Sams on the show. But fellas, how are you guys doing right now?
I'm doing well. So just to clear the air ahead of time, obviously Sam's last name is Hoppin. Sam Factor, your last name is actually Factor.
Yes.
Okay, yes, that's fucking awesome. Let's start there. Factor is an awesome last name. So I will just go by last name then. And you guys can call me Mackins if you want. I've always went by that.
Yeah, that works for me too. I think I'll just hop in Factor. I like those.
And we got Garner. We don't call him by his first name ever.
Except that one time a couple weeks ago. But I think we've...
And then we're like, who's after. Ryan?
Okay, well, as always for our show today, we're going to start off with our kickoff question. We'll do our mental health minutes and then dive into our AFC East divisional preview. So without further ado, let's kick things off.
And this game is underway.
So as we're going to continue with the divisional previews, our kickoff question is, who's currently your favorite to win the division? And other Sam, I'll let you answer here first.
Yeah, for me, it has to be the Patriots. Listen, every year, I'm a Patriots fan, so I got to get that out to begin with. But every year, I take a very analytical approach to my fantasy football analysis and just my sports analysis overall. And every year for the AFC East specifically, I look from the bottom up and basically just cross at least two of the teams off because they have absolutely no chance. This season, the Jets, to me, have no hope for competing for a playoff spot. For as long as Adam Gase is around, they're not a concern for me in the AFC East. The Dolphins should be much better this year, but they still, I think, are a year or two away from amassing enough talent on the defensive side to actually be competitive in the NFL. The Bills have a chance, but to me it's far and away, with the Cam Newton signing and Bill Belichick still being there, it's the Patriots.
I'm in agreement with you. I think before the Cam Newton signing, which we'll obviously talk about here in a couple of minutes, I was getting ready to pick the Bills, and now I'm just at the point where it's like, I'm going to pick the Patriots until they don't win it, because it's been that way for as long as I can remember. So I'm in agreement with you.
Yeah. And the crazy thing too, Sam, is that when we reached out to set this podcast up, it was before the Cam Newton news. And I was planning to just sob about how I'm going to have to watch Jarrett Stidham or Brian Hoyer throw passes for the Pats this season. So good news has come ever since we set this up.
Bill Belichick does it again, man. I'm in the same boat where I would have went Bills. I would have gone Bills, but now they've got Cam. I think it, at least for the moment or the time being, really fixes all their quarterback woes. So chalk up another 12-win season. Fuck
yeah, okay. I'll, I'll echo it really short, quick, 4 for 4, that I was thinking Bills, Cam Newton came in, Patriots now.
Yeah, I was getting a little bit excited to see what Belichick was going to do with Jarrett Stidham under center, but I guess we'll have to wait another day to figure that out. Okay, so before we get into the divisional preview, we want to take a minute to have our mental health minute, and this one we're going to rely on our guests to have Sam share what's one way that you found has been helpful in keeping your mental health in a good state during quarantine. Obviously, we're in a bit of an unprecedented time with the coronavirus, so how have you been able to stay healthy mentally?
Yeah, and I love your guys' dedication to this topic. I've found, you know, I've had experience with mental health issues, you know, my life, a lot of people that are close to me as well. I found that the busier I can stay on things that I'm actually interested in, the happier I am overall. But also, one very functional thing that I've done in my life is just make sure I get 8 hours of sleep. And it wasn't a very cool thing to do in college, but it has really helped me. Just getting enough sleep is one of the biggest pieces of advice I can give from my personal experience.
Yeah, that's really important. I think for the longest time in college, for me, everyone was like, "Oh, what do you drink for caffeine or whatever?" I'm like, "Oh, sleep is my caffeine, because I always get 8 or 9 hours of sleep. I could sleep in until noon on the weekends," but that is no longer the case. It seems like sleep is always the first thing to go when things get busy. So I respect your dedication to getting a healthy 8 hours.
So I have an interesting question for you, Factor, because I'm a bit of a night owl myself, and then I'll tend to sleep in later if I'm up later sometimes. Do you then make an effort, because it's 8 hours of sleep, like make sure that you're going to bed early enough, obviously, to kind of wake up for that day job or even on the weekends? Or how do you manage that? Because I think sometimes I feel like, oh, well, you know, if I go to bed at 2 a.m., but I sleep until 10, then I'm still getting my 8 hours, but I don't know if that's the right way to go about it.
Yeah, for me, I'm also a morning person, so my most productive hours in the day are from like 5 to 8 a.m. if I can wake up in time, so which means I'm most nights going to bed by 9 to 10 o'clock, and I've been doing that for a pretty long time now, and it's especially necessary for me if, you know, we mentioned at the beginning, I'm trying to go out on my own venture, and so I got to do a lot of tedious task to get that going. So I've been waking up pretty early so I can try to fit in that time around my full-time job.
Good for you, man. I think that's a good habit to form for sure.
Yeah, that is great. I mean, I thought I was a morning person, but 5 o'clock was a bit of a different level than I'm at. Well, thank you, Sam, for sharing. Let's now get into the meat of the show, our AFC East divisional preview. For this preview, we're going to talk position by position, go through most of the fantasy relevant players in the division, just to give some analysis around who we might be targeting or avoiding and stuff like that, try and make some of the murky situations a bit clearer. So let's talk first about the Cam Newton signing. We mentioned it earlier. He's going to the Patriots on a one-year deal. And I want to ask simply what your level of confidence is that Cam Newton can be a top five quarterback this year. Because for a stretch of several years before his foot and shoulder injuries, he was a top five quarterback year in and year out. But obviously the injuries have been a concern. So Andrew, I'll start with you. What level of confidence, what percentage chance, I guess, do you give of him being a top five quarterback?
Gosh, man, I gotta say, just off the cuff, it's probably 25% or less for me. Like, because the way that we've been talking about the current top six guys in ADP, that being obviously Mahomes, Lamar Jackson, Kyler Murray, Russell Wilson, Deshaun Watson, and maybe Matt Ryan in there too. Like, I feel like they are all poised on their offense, their situation. the rushing floor, like to be able to be in that top five conversation. And we don't really know where Cam's at health wise, which could be a big question mark, but he's always been dinged for his accuracy as well. So I don't know if he has the full dual threat ready to go, like locked and loaded with the Patriots. Factor, what are you thinking here?
Yeah, I have a similar perspective. So for when I talk about Rangers, I made my own simulation that basically simulates the season 10,000 times, and then I pull the top 5% of outcomes for the ceiling and the bottom 5% for the floor. And when I did this with Cam Newton, obviously there's a lot of assumptions I have to make with his numbers, but his last full season was 2017, and when you use those numbers to run these simulations, his ceiling was quarterback 3. And the good thing about the way I do this is it also takes into account what you just mentioned with the other quarterbacks that he has to compete against. His rushing upside, if he's healthy, and I think that there's a good chance he is healthy, he's had a lot of time to heal and to work out. He looks good on the hype Twitter videos. I think that, to me, I'm pretty good with that 25% or less chance that it happens, but he also has an extremely low floor. There's a chance that he doesn't even play a snap in the case where he's not healthy.
I said Matt Ryan, but who I meant to mention was Dak Prescott. Everyone loves Dak right now. That's the There's like six guys up there who I'm way more confident in a top five season.
Well, hopefully these next couple questions can spark a bit more controversy, because I had 25% written down in my notes as well. You said all the same points that I was going to make about his health, which subsequently impacts his rushing floor. Honestly, the thing I'm not worried about is his weapons, because he showed in Carolina that he could do what he does without a full stable of receivers. And, you know, obviously doesn't have Christian McCaffrey now, but, you know, James White out of the backfield, I think, are good enough. So I think the players in New England are good enough to give him the top five ceiling. I think it's just interesting when you talk about Cam Newton in redraft one quarterback versus a two quarterback league. I'd be more willing to take Cam in a one quarterback league, because there are going to be so many more players on the waiver wire for you to pick up later, or, you know, just sub in if he doesn't play a snap or something like that. He hits his floor. Whereas in a super flex or two quarterback league, he's almost all quarterbacks are going to be taken in those types of drafts. So you're not really going to have much of a backup option if he doesn't hit his ceiling. So let's move on to another quarterback in the division that has a rushing floor. Obviously someone that showed he can be extremely efficient with his legs, and that's Josh Allen. Is he good enough for fantasy as a passer? Can he improve as a passer? Because I think that still is the big question mark surrounding him. Obviously the Bills added Stephon Diggs this offseason, so some people think that might help him in the passing game. But for me, I think he's good enough of a passer to be a relevant fantasy quarterback. I likely won't have him on many, if any, of my teams because of his cost, but I think he's a safe enough option that could win you a week if he puts it all together with the passing as well. But I really only expect that to happen probably three or four times throughout the season, and the rest of the time it'll be middle of the road performances, if that. Factor, what do you think about Josh Allen?
Well, the only direction his passing game goes up. I mean, he's not a good passer in the NFL. He had the 37th worst completion percentage last year. To me, that number can only possibly go up as he improves. He also was really dinged last year, just with the Bills kind of shifting towards a run first mentality, which I expect them to continue to do this season, which also limits his upside. But if those two things change, if he becomes a slightly more efficient passer, and game script shifts a little bit for him, I think that he definitely can be a reliable fantasy quarterback solely because of his rushing ability. He averaged the second most rushing attempts per game at the position last year. So if he keeps that up, then he can definitely have a high floor in fantasy football.
Yeah, I think the big thing to think about here in terms of if you're projecting his passing to improve, these run-first teams think about establishing the run to set up the pass. So play action, giving Stephon Diggs chances to burn someone who bites on like a run play. And I think that that could really improve not only his completion percentage, which I just pulled up, was 58.8% last year, which is disgusting, but his TD percentage was less than 5%. So I think that has a big chance to jump up too. When we talk about, like, you know, what's average in the NFL, it's somewhere like closer to 5 or 6%. Right. And so that could get him a lot more TDs. I mean, he threw less than 10 picks last year, so he seems like he's taking care of the ball too. So yeah, I like Josh Allen, but I don't want to overpay for him in drafts either.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how their game scripts change this year, if at all, because they threw the ball on 55% of plays last year, which was in the bottom seven in the league. And you would think, again, they do have a really good defense. They've got a lot of good playmakers on defense, but do they take a step back? Are they forced to throw the ball a little bit more? Will certainly be interesting to watch. Okay, so let's stick with the same team, because this backfield in Buffalo is causing a lot of headaches for a lot of people. I think a lot of people were excited about Devin Singletary and his potential in the second year of that offense. And then the Bills just kind of fucked things up and drafted Zach Moss. So where does everyone land on the Singletary versus Moss debate? Do you think Moss is the more valuable running back since he has an eighth round ADP, or are you still comfortable taking Singletary in the fourth round? And Sam, I'll pass it to you first.
Yeah, to me, there's no, the upside for Moss really isn't there to me. I think he needs an injury to be forced into that three down role that we're looking for in fantasy football. So I'm completely avoiding Moss in terms of redraft. Singletary, though, also his floor is capped a little bit by the presence of Moss. I think Moss could steal some third down work or some goal line work from him. He was a productive receiver in 2 years that he was in college. So to me, I'm staying away from both of them. I'm not willing to pay the current fourth round price tag for Devin Singletary. I bet that drops, though, as the season goes on, in which case I might pick up a few shares of him. But I'm completely avoiding Zach Moss.
It's interesting. I thought that a lot of Devin Singletary's work last year was in the passing game too, though. So you just expect that the kind of receptions between the two of them will get split up?
Yeah, my concern is, right, Frank Gore was not involved in the passing game at all, but Zach Moss has a little bit higher of a ceiling than Frank Gore did in terms of the receiving game. Yeah. So I wouldn't be surprised if we see him cut a little bit into Singletary's receiving work.
Yeah, I mean, at this point it's tough, because we were talking about this in a previous episode, like how high Singletary's ADP was before the NFL draft, and then it's just kind of plummeted. So now it's in a place where, okay, his ADP's way down, but the work is split. So I think I'd be willing to pay for him at that discount, with the upshot that Moss doesn't see the field as much as we think. But it's definitely nebulous. And looking at both of their kind of draft capital, like mid, late third round picks, it doesn't make me feel much confident of like one person over the other either.
So the way I'm thinking about it, and even though Singletary's ADP has dropped a little bit, and rightfully so, I think you're still drafting Singletary at his ceiling, whereas you're drafting Moss at nearly his floor. I mean, when you get to the 8th, 9th, 10th round, the opportunity cost of drafting someone else is slim to none, where if that injury does happen, or if he takes that Frank Gore role and he's getting 8, 10, maybe 12 touches or opportunities per game, he might fall into the end zone once or twice in a game if he's, again, getting that goal line work that Frank Gore was getting. You also got to keep in mind that the guy we were just talking about, Josh Allen, is going to run the ball. So that's going to take away from Singletary's workload. I think that's what a lot of people were hoping for, is like, oh, Josh Allen's just going to sort of disappear and all of those red zone rushes are going to go directly to Singletary, but he's still there. He's still going to scramble around and throw some backward laterals when it's inopportune. But I'm starting to like Moss in the eighth round. I think he's especially a decent target in like a zero RB draft strategy, because yes, I think he'll have more of a role than we're leading on, than him just needing an injury to see any increased workload. So
I think the worst thing with Singletary is last year I heard a podcast talking about how he wasn't getting enough reps, and they started calling him Devin Singletary, and I hated that, because if you had him on your team, you were feeling that pain. And so I guess it is one of those things. If you want to avoid that pain this year, might as well avoid him altogether.
Good point. Yeah, his efficiency was off the charts, and people are looking for him to get the workload, but it looks like that might not happen. Someone that will likely get a large workload for the New York Jets is Le'Veon Bell. And I think everyone's just wondering if he can return to form, or does the Frank Gore signing, the aforementioned Frank Gore, does his addition signal the end of days for Le'Veon Bell? It seems like Frank Gore will be playing well past Patrick Mahomes' new extension, but that's neither here nor there. So, Andrew, how do you feel about Le'Veon Bell right now?
I know that Frank Gore is always a thorn in everyone's side, but I don't want that to intimidate me from taking someone like Le'Veon Bell, because he saw so much volume last year. I think there's opportunity for improvement in efficiency as well, because his efficiency was just that bad last year. And I think the Jets, I mean, you can say it was Adam Gase if you want to, and you can take that and run with it. But I think that the season was lost so early on, just with the whole Darnold mono stuff, that it really put them in a bad way as an organization and as a team. And I would love to see, like, you know, what would have happened, or what will happen in 2020 with a fully healthy Darnold and supporting cast. And improved from last year, too. Like, they've gotten a ton of different guys on the offensive line to have a rotation there. Denzel Mims is on the team now. I think this roster is actually better than it was last year.
So here's my conundrum, because I think Bell's probably got the clearest path to volume of any of the running backs in this division. But there's one person that the other Sam mentioned earlier in the episode that is holding him back, and that's Adam Gase. And I don't trust anything that he's touching with the 10-foot pole. And I just have a feeling he's going to find a way to give Frank Gore touches when he doesn't deserve them. Again, I think if I'm going with a modified zero RB approach in the first couple of rounds, Bell is a great target, because in those instances, you're just looking for volume. But I don't think Bell is at the point in his career where he's going to be winning people leagues at a fourth round ADP.
Factor. Can you speak a little bit more to Adam Gase and why he is so bad for offenses, or like based on any research you've done?
Yeah, I mean the common thing that people cite, right, is just that all the players in the Dolphins that succeeded right when he left, with whether it was Devontae Parker, Ryan Fitzpatrick, Patrick Laird's breakout season. I'm sure Adam Gase affected that. but just overall, I have seen nothing from him that tells me that he is a coach you want to be involved with your fantasy players. So far in my experience, just watching him and watching the decisions he makes on the field, I think bad coaches get especially exposed when their starting quarterbacks go down. Obviously, quarterback's the most important position, and the team's expected to do pretty bad, but they were absolutely horribly coached under the bad roster too. And a similar thing happened while back with Aaron Rodgers. When Aaron Rodgers went down, Mike McCarthy got absolutely exposed, and the offense just fell at shambles. obviously Sam Darnold's no Aaron Rodgers, but he has shown me nothing to believe in him up to this point. I think he is the worst coach in the league now that Freddie Kitchens is out of the picture. So I really, like, if he weren't there, I'd be a lot more excited by some of these Jets players. But just to quickly quantify how inefficient Le'Veon Bell was last year, he had the 12th most carries in the league per game, but the 46th most rushing touchdowns per game.
I still can't believe that he didn't have a run of more than 20 yards last year. That just blows my mind. I mean, you see a list of the players that do, and there are players with like five carries that had a 20-yard rush. I mean, Adam Gase has been riding the coattails of that fantastic Peyton Manning season for years and years. It blows my mind how he ended up getting even one job after the Dolphins gig. But I think it sounds like we're all sort of in agreement here.
Yeah, but I do really like Le'Veon Bell at his current price. He can't get more inefficient than he was. Like, he has to score more touchdowns.
Yeah, I think that's the thing for me is that, sorry, I cut you off there, Factor. It's just taking a chance on those guys.
I mean, the Jets as a whole, I mean, I think J.J. Zacharyson pointed out in an article recently just how few touchdowns as a team the Jets had last year and how historically bad that is. And it basically takes everything going wrong for them to score that few touchdowns. So I think Bell has a chance to hit 7, maybe 8 touchdowns, but I don't know if – I think 10 touchdowns is probably on the higher side of his range of outcomes, if possible. Okay, so why don't we move into some pass catchers? And let's go back to Buffalo, because I think obviously one of the biggest – movements of the offseason was the Bills bringing in Stephon Diggs. He's a new, an old face in a new place, as some people would say. And a lot of the questions are if he can build chemistry with Allen. Obviously, the wacky offseason that we're going through now won't allow him to build physical chemistry off the field. So does that influence how you're looking at Stephon Diggs? I mean, I think for me, it's him and John Brown basically thriving in the same part of the field last year, which is deep downfield. They both had a ton of air yards and a very high average depth of target. Not to mention, Allen is not that good of a deep ball thrower as Cousins was last year for Stephon Diggs. So I think they'll either cannibalize each other, you know, Diggs and Brown, or one will come out on top. But I tend to think it'll be the former, and neither of them will be that fantasy relevant, as tough as it is to say, because Diggs is one of the best route running receivers in the NFL. Factor, what do you think about this situation?
Yeah, I mean, hands down, Stephon Diggs is one of the most efficient and best receivers in the NFL, which obviously can only help us in fantasy football. To me, he's definitely going to be the lead guy in this offense. But there is definitely that redundancy that you mentioned with John Brown, both of them being deep threats. I think that John Brown might take some of those deep targets away from Stephon Diggs, but I think all of this is kind of factored into his price right now, pun intended, factored into his price.
I was going to say.
But I think it's kind of factored into his price. He's at wide receiver around 25 right now in the drafts I've been doing. You kind of have to decide between Stephon Diggs at T.Y. Hilton or like a Devontae Parker in drafts right now. I think that's a pretty reasonable price for him. I haven't been leaning his way that often. I think he's going to have some massive spike weeks this season, but it's just going to be too inconsistent for redraft purposes.
So the other thing I'm wondering too is, because last year I think was the first year we really saw Diggs used as that mm-hmm. deep threat. For the several years before that, he was, I don't want to call him a possession receiver, he wasn't quite that, but he wasn't nearly the downfield threat that he was last year. So I wonder if the Bills will shift him back to having a role like that. And to what you said, to also to what you said of like, he will be the wide receiver one, like he will be the number one. That's where I have a little hesitation because yes, they pay, I mean, they physically pay, like they paid in draft stock a ton to get Diggs. I mean, a first rounder is all you need to know, but again, I think it's the chemistry aspect of things of Josh Allen not having the opportunity to build that chemistry with him this off season. He's got the chemistry with John Brown already, and how does that all play out?
Yeah, man, I love Diggs in terms of his talent. So I have him ranked really high in my wide receiver rankings. I think he's at wide receiver 13. Now I wouldn't draft him there. I love the value, like you said, because of that upside. And the Bills have reported that they like Diggs and Allen have worked out, which is better than nothing. So they're starting to get that chemistry. Obviously, it's a really weird season. Diggs also tweeted last night, he's not like even 100% confident he'd want to play during COVID, which he could just sit out. And hopefully we would know that before the season starts. But I think you made a lot of good points there, Factor. And it's just a matter of, do you want to take on the risk and deal with the headaches, I think.
Well, yeah, skipping the season for COVID is one thing we haven't talked about. I know that's been a lot more prevalent in baseball and basketball since those seasons are officially starting earlier. One thing, and I want to give credit to my girlfriend that she pointed out last night is, you know, do you want to be necessarily like avoiding players that have families that might influence their decision to play because they have a family? I mean, who knows how strict these procedures are going to be for the NFL? You know, are they going to need to be away from their families for 4 months at a time? And does that influence what their decision is for the season? So not to get into too much of a rabbit hole, but that is something to monitor. I mean, Diggs is the first person that I've heard of in the NFL, at least, that has even mentioned potentially sitting out, but certainly something to monitor, especially as we get closer to the season.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, I don't think he said he would specifically entertain sitting out, but he is saying he doesn't feel like the greatest or doesn't know about like how to feel about it, despite loving football with all of his heart. But yeah, I'm going to not go down that rabbit hole any further.
Okay. So let's talk about some of the other receivers in the division, and let's play a bit of an ADP game here. As far as late round receivers go, which of these players do you think has the best value? And this is based on Fantasy Football Calculator ADP. So we have N'Keal Harry, of which the jersey Sam Factor is wearing tonight. He's going in the 14th round. Preston Williams is going in the 15th round, and Breshad Perriman is going in the 16th round. You could probably also add Denzel Mims, who's getting drafted very late, or not drafted at all. Which of those three players at that very late cost are you most comfortable having on your team? And Sam, I'll pass it to you first. I think I might have an idea of who you're going to choose based on your jersey.
Yeah, so I'm about one bad season away from being a full-blown N'Keal Harry truther for the rest of his career. I think that's the trajectory I'm heading down right now. So I'm a big N'Keal Harry fan. I loved him coming out of college, and then he landed on my favorite team. So I'm definitely biased towards him. But for in terms of what I'm drafting for my teams, Perriman is really interesting because he flashed as a deep threat at the end of last season. He finished with three straight 100-yard performances. And then the Jets go and invest in one of my favorite receivers in this class, Denzel Mims. To me, after that draft selection, I pretty much canceled Breshad Perriman from my draft list. I think that he could start the season out strong, but to me, I envisioned him losing that role throughout the season to who they want to be the future of their receivers, which is Denzel Mims. So Breshad Perriman to me is out of the question. N'Keal Harry to me is the high ceiling just because he's the only one on this list realistically that could be the number one wide receiver on his team this season without an injury. That's still in the realm of possibilities for N'Keal Harry, but I still have to go with Preston Williams here. He actually produced as a rookie before he got injured. And going around later than N'Keal Harry doesn't really make sense to me. He's pretty solidified as that wide receiver too in Miami.
I'm going to go with N'Keal Harry here just because we talked about, you know, if Cam's on this team and he can do amazing things with less than amazing weapons, like he turned Kelvin Benjamin's rookie season into 10 touchdowns or something crazy. I think he can do that with a guy who's got the draft capital N'Keal Harry has, and I would probably pick him just because I never even heard of Preston Williams before he ended up tearing his ACL.
So it's funny because I actually have Preston Williams written down, but Sam, to your point, I think Harry is the ceiling play, and what are you looking for in the 14th round or later if not ceiling? I mean, you're not looking for, you know, a guy that's going to put up 7 or 8, 9 fantasy points a game for you. So if Harry has that chance to put up double-digit touchdowns on this crazy season with Cam Newton under center, then I'll for sure take him. So I think I'm actually going to answer with N'Keal Harry.
Let's go.
As well. Okay, so we're going to stick in the pass catcher realm for this next question and shift to tight ends, though. I think it's pretty well known that the AFC East is a barren wasteland for tight ends outside of Mike Gesicki. Real quick, are there any guys other than Gesicki that are worth drafting in a redraft league? I mean, is Dawson Knox even on anyone's radar at all?
I swore I saw something on Twitter about, like, and it could have just been a shot in the dark, but it was someone comparing Dawson Knox and his profile to Mark Andrews and the type of offense that they're into, like being run first. Maybe that benefits, you know, Josh Allen throwing to tight ends, but I haven't really looked into it outside of that. So I don't know if there's any analysis you've done, Factor, on specifically like prospects and how they develop. But I mean, even so, like Knox is only like 23 years old, so it's hard to, you know, project based on his age.
Yeah, I definitely see the link to Mark Andrews in the sense that he had a really good yards per reception. He was third highest in yards per reception among tight ends last season. So when he is involved, he's being very efficient in terms of fantasy football. So if he were to see an uptick in volume, I could see him plunging into, you know, the unimpressive top 12 tight ends that we have these days. Back to Mike Gesicki, I don't think that he's even close to the upside that Gesicki's offering. I have him ranked as the 13th tight end on my rankings, but again, I think more about range of outcomes, and Gesicki is the athletic profile beast who is heading into his third year, the most likely year that tight ends break out, and he has a pretty lackluster receiving group behind him. So I think he has all the components to be a late-round breakout tight end.
Yeah, I love to hear that. I've really bumped Gesicki up in my ranking since I've seen some of his, his snap share in terms of where he's lining up. He's generally lining up in the slot, like as a wide receiver, but he's running a lot of routes, but he's listed at tight end. So, I mean, please give me someone like that in the tight end position.
For not the first time this episode, we are all simpatico. Feeling the Gesicki love. He has crept into my top 12. I think he's got, I started to warm up to him a little bit earlier in the offseason. I didn't really know what the thing for Gesicki was, but a lot of the stuff about his route running and the fact that he's lining up in the slot and not in line as a blocker, I think really helps him. It'll just be interesting to see how the new offensive coordinator in Miami ends up treating him. Okay, so before we wrap up the divisional preview, why don't we go around the horn quick and say one player that you are targeting from this division to have on your rosters and one player that you are avoiding at all costs, regardless of value. And Sam, I'll let you start as our guest of honor.
Yeah, the one guy that I'm definitely targeting in this division is Julian Edelman, who I think is locked in for another big, big lead in targets on the Patriots. I think he's really fallen due to his age, but I've been scooping up really late in all the drafts I've been in. And one guy that I'm definitely avoiding is Zach Moss, who we talked about before. To me, he has Damien Harris written all over him. He ran a really slow 40, and I could see him just being ineffective at the NFL level. Plus, he has to go through a guy to get there. So I'm avoiding Zach Moss.
I can go next, Hoppin. We just mentioned him in the tight end position. I would be targeting Mike Gesicki with everything that I've been hearing and warming up to. And in terms of avoiding, I'll go with a wide receiver from the Dolphins we haven't talked about, Devontae Parker,
Yes. The
Corey Davis of the Miami Dolphins, if you will, as we've mentioned on some previous podcasts. But I think the big thing for me is like, okay, so I don't know how big of a factor this is, but Preston Williams tears his ACL and then he starts to go off. So when he's the sole wide receiver target, you see production. Plus, this is the first time that he's done that in his career. So how do we know that it's not just a blip? I have him way low in my wide receiver rankings.
I can't explain how he dominated Stephon Gilmore so bad in that last time he played the Patriots. He looked like the best receiver in the NFL in that game.
I wonder if it's just people have off weeks. You caught Gilmore sleeping on the Dolphins, like in prep, so I guess that's the way it goes. Any given Sunday, man.
I guess I'll go because I'm gonna copy you for the target. I'm going Gesicki. I loved him at the end of last year, and I especially love the value you can get for him this year. I mean, he's going at the end of the round and just throwaway pick territory because so many other tight ends are getting hyped up, and I think he's got a lot of potential. It's a potential top 12 for it's almost a throwaway pick. And I don't know if it's a player, but I am avoiding the Dolphins backfield right now because I don't know who's supposed to come out as number one. Are they going to keep rotating with Breida, Howard, Laird still there? I don't know where they're going and what direction. And so I don't have any interest in investing in that right now.
I actually love what they did there for NFL purposes.
NFL purposes.
Like 1-2 punch.
I love it. But for fantasy, I don't know how to be productive with what they're going to be doing.
So it's funny you say that because the player that I was going to say I'm targeting is Jordan Howard. I think he's got, again, we talk about path to volume. I think people have just, they've discounted him so much that, again, you're drafting him at nearly his floor. I mean, you can get him in almost the same round as Zach Moss, and he's, I think, has a much clearer path to volume than Moss does. The player I'm avoiding is all of the Jets except Le'Veon Bell. I don't need to go on a diatribe about Adam Gase anymore because we've talked a lot about that, but that's, I just don't see a lot of upside for that offense. Okay, so before we get out of here, we're going to do some rapid fire questions with our guest, have a little fun, close the show up on a high note. So without further ado, let's get these going. Sam, what is your favorite sport to watch besides NFL football?
Definitely the NBA.
NBA, okay. Hawaiian pizza, good or abomination?
Good.
Good, okay.
Good answer.
This is a Scott Fishbowl related question. What was your favorite toy growing up?
Oh, my favorite toy. I was big into Legos. Is there a Lego division?
Yes,
there is, yeah.
I think one of the most popular requested divisions. With the topic of quarantine on our mind, give us one streaming recommendation, TV or movie.
I'm a big movie guy. If you haven't seen Parasite, you definitely have to go see Parasite. That was one of the best movies I've seen. I think it's on Amazon.
It's on Hulu as well, I believe. Definitely a good pick.
And another good movie that I haven't seen in a long time that I just rewatched is The Prestige. I think it's also on Hulu.
Nice.
if you're into magicians, it's an amazing movie.
Cool. Check those out. What is the best purchase that you've made this year?
Best purchase that I've made? Probably the purchase I made to actually form my limited liability company that I've been working on. I believe that the best investments you can make are in yourself. And that's kind of what this was.
Awesome. I love that answer. That's such a good one. So unique. Who is the first fantasy football player that you remember drafting?
Oh, it is Larry Johnson. I very vividly remember picking him right after his peak. My first fantasy football season didn't go very well.
It's always fun to hear those answers. Jump in the time box. Last question here. If you had all the free time in the world, what's one hobby that you would dedicate your time to that isn't fantasy football related?
I think I'd say education. My full-time job right now is as a high school math teacher. To me, I know there's been a lot of talk about, you know, inequity and things in our country. To me, education is one of the biggest areas that we can fix to see, you know, improvements in that area in our country. There's massive educational inequity in our country, and so I would say that.
That's awesome. I will say, I mean, my girlfriend is a teacher as well. I have the utmost respect for all teachers. I think you should all be making 7 figures for the job that you do. And again, that's not because I have a girlfriend that's a teacher, but it's one of those jobs that it is often thankless. It's, you know, you don't get enough credit, especially in times like this. So I very much respect and appreciate your trade. But Sam, it has been a pleasure having you on the episode today. Before we get out, is there anything that you want to plug to our audience?
Yeah, so I've been working really hard on a product that's going to help a lot of people, I'm hoping, win their fantasy football leagues. It's going to be coming to the App Store for free soon. You can follow along on Instagram or Twitter at WalterPicksApp. The app's going to be called WalterPicks. I'm bad at naming, but we'll see how it goes. But yeah, so at WalterPicksApp, and that's where you can follow along with when the app is launched on Twitter and Instagram.
Perfect. Well, I'll make sure that we are some of the first downloaders of the app. I'm very much looking forward to it. I've always enjoyed your work. So for Sam Factor, FF_Factors on Twitter, for Andrew Mackins at Andrew Mackins, and for producer Garner at Garther, I am at Sam Hoppin. You can follow our podcast at Pod After TD, and
the kick is good.